This is a tale about a tale. A tale that belonged to a little red squirrel, and his name was Nutkin. And so begins Beatrix Potter in the tale of Squirrel Nutkin. Squirrel Nutkin and his brother and other companions have decided to row their rafts across the lake to Owl Island, presided over by wise old Brown, the owl who lives in the great oak tree. Respectfully, all the squirrels ask old Brown for permission to gather nuts on the island, but not old Squirrel Nutkin. He dances and sings riddles impertinently while the others watch, shocked at his behavior. For 6 days, old Brown patiently endures Nutkin's improper antics, but on the last day, he sweeps Squirrel Nutkin up and takes him into the oak tree house where he intends to hang him from his tail and then skin him. Squirrel Nutkin pulls away so hard that his tail is broken in two. He escapes. Although he has lost his tail, he retains his cheekiness. For as Beatrix Potter concluded, to this day, if you meet Nutkin up a tree and ask him a riddle, he will throw sticks, stamp his feet, and scold and shout. Yes, the story of a squirrel. And there were other stories, stories of frogs and ducks and rabbits, and they all came from the fertile mind of Beatrix Potter, a woman who created for children so many beautiful classics. And so it is that on today's presentation, we turn to highlighting not only the life and times of this gifted and imaginative authoress, but also to read excerpts from her quaint, wonderful little books. A tale in itself is the tale of the woman, and what a story it is. We invite you to join us for The Tale of Beatrix Potter. What a wonderful story we have for you on today's Visual Sounds presentation, as we ask you to sit back and enjoy a story that actually begins better than 100 years ago. Come along with me. Of course, you've heard of Peter Rabbit. But have you ever heard of Mrs. Tittlemouse, Jemima Puddle Duck, Twiggy Winkle? These are all the fantastic animals created in the mind of one Beatrix Potter. Yes, for children, young and old, for the young at heart, she created a world of beauty, of imagination, of color, and of excitement. And this is the world we tell you about in her books. But there is also another world, that life led by Beatrix Potter. Quite different from that portrayed in her happy, enjoyable, small books. And so this is the story we relate. The story of Beatrix Potter and her tales. Beatrix Potter was born on July 28th in the year of 1866 at No. 2 Bolton Gardens, Kensington. There she lived with her parents and a brother, born 6 years later, for nearly 50 years. She was brought up in a quiet middle-class affluency and perfect Victorian gentility in a household which made no concessions to childhood. She was rarely seen outside her nursery, and she never went to school. Instead, Beatrix Potter's upbringing was entrusted to a series of governesses and tutors, and she built a private world centered about her imagination and the pet animals she kept in her nursery. Thus, she grew up in uncommon solitude, in an atmosphere virtually devoid of normal warmth and companionship. Accustomed to enduring the sense of unreality of Bolton Gardens, the formality, the stony silences and gloomy drabness, broken only by the slow ticking of a grandfather's clock, which was heard throughout the house like a monotonous heartbeat. It seems that the only reprieves from this stifling routine were the occasional family visits to relations and the holidays taken in the spring and summer. Trips to Scotland, to the lakes, to Camfield Place, to Ants at Putney, to Hastings for Easter, to Sidmouth, but always in the same rigid pattern. Even during a holiday, the Potter lifestyle was the same as in London, dull and quiet. Only the servants knew no boredom as they duplicated hour by hour the daily regimen of No. 2, Bolton Gardens. However, in the Lake District, young Beatrix was permitted freedom to explore the lush countryside, and she did just that. Every insect, every creature that flew or hopped or crawled or ran, every plant, tree, and blade of grass, every detail of Lakeland farm life came under her scrutiny, and later took flight in her imagination. Unconsciously, even as a young girl, she was gathering the material from which her perfect little tales were to emerge. Beatrix smuggled pets and hundreds of specimens of plant life into her little nursery, and the animals were to her what real friends would have been. She spent limitless hours sketching her friends and soon a plain field mouse was bedecked in a splendid coat and jaunty hat. A rabbit was dressed in a jacket, complete with brass buttons and kerchief in his pocket, while a starched cap and gingham dress graced a tiny, prickly hedgehog. Beatrix Potter once reflected, "I do not remember a time when I did not try to invent pictures and make myself a fairyland amongst the wild flowers, the mosses, the woods and streams, all the thousands of objects of the countryside, that pleasant, unchanging world of realism and romance." This private fairyland she willingly shared with cousins and other children to whom she wrote delightful picture letters in lieu of conventional letters. She would write and illustrate a story, almost always with some gentle hint of danger or adventure, and concluded it on a happy note with a firm yet unsentimental statement in favor of morality and sensibility. In 1893, she wrote her first and most famous tale, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, in the form of such a letter, to 5-year-old Noel Moore. It was from the familiar Lakeland residence that all the characters emerged. Mrs. Tittlemouse and Johnny Townmouse. They lead a celebrity waltz in the hall of the Potter House at Bolton Gardens. Later, they organize a picnic in the country, which is disrupted by a group of inelegant country mice. Mrs. Twigglewinkle, hedgehog, laundress, and excellent clear starcher, keeps Peter Rabbit's handkerchiefs clean and freshly ironed. Yes? Peter Rabbit. And Peter himself appears among his favorite radishes and lettuces. His tale is, of course, so familiar that it hardly needs retelling. His story has been told at bedtime probably more than any other. Unlike his sisters and brother, Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail, he is always in trouble in Mr. McGregor's garden, and while he always gets away, and sometimes barely, he never gets blackberries and milk for supper. Only tea. Seven years after she wrote The Tale of Peter Rabbit, Beatrix Potter, in the year of 1900, had the story privately printed in an edition of 250 tiny white-covered books, 5 inches by 4 inches, with a new drawing every time you turn the page. It was quite an independent act for a young woman of 34, who was still regarded as a naive child by her parents. Thank you. In the year of 1902, with the encouragement of a family friend whose name was Canon Rawnsley, Beatrix Potter submitted the story to Frederick Warren and Company, prolific publisher of children's books, and began her career as Beatrix Potter the authoress. From that date on, she ceased to be just an ordinary resident of Bolton Gardens. In the next 10 years or so, she was to write close to 22 tales, which have become pure delight and one of the great legacies of childhood. Mr. Jeremy Fisher, a most elegant frog, has a moment or two of real danger in the tale of Jeremy Fisher. He lives in a damp house amongst the buttercups at the edge of a pond, and is quite a happy creature, despite his habitual wetness. One day, Jeremy decides to go fishing for minnows, but while he is out, it rains. However, he proceeds to float along in his boat, which is actually a lily pad, until a stickleback, then a trout, nibble at his line. The trout is particularly stubborn and snaps Jeremy Fisher up, fishing pole and all. But disliking the flavor of Jeremy Fisher's Macintosh, he spits him out again. Whereupon Jeremy Fisher swims quickly to the edge of the pond, hops up on shore, and jumps about gleefully, for he's been spared and will think twice before going fishing again. Jemima Puddleduck is a simpleton, we discover as the story of her near misadventure unfolds. She has left the safety of the farmyard and set out to find a dry nesting place where she can lay and hatch her eggs. Now in the woods, she sees a tree stump near some tall foxgloves and decides that it's a perfect place. However, seated on a nearby stump is an elegantly dressed fox who is reading a newspaper. When Jemima explains the nature of her business, Mr. Fox gallantly escorts her to his woodshed, full of soft, downy feathers. Naively, Mrs. Puddleduck lays her eggs and prepares to hatch them, but Mr. Fox suggests that they have a meal of sage and onion omelet before she begins her babysitting duties. Abruptly, Fox becomes most ungentlemanly when he seizes Jemima Puddleduck in an attempt to make her the meal's main course instead. But the sound of approaching dogs, signaling a fox hunt, drives him away, and Jemima Puddleduck fortunately finds herself saved and free to pursue her motherly chores. Pew, 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 pew Mrs. Pettitoes, mother of eight little pigs, among whom are Alexander and Pigling Bland, sends them off to market in their Sunday finery with a final warning to safeguard their pig papers, which will enable them to cross the county line and go to market. On the way, Alexander not only eats his own supper, but also devours his brother's. He also teases and romps about until he becomes quite untidy. At the county line, a policeman requests their papers. Pigling Bland produces his, but alas, Alexander's cannot be found, and he is sent home. A sad but resolute Pigling Bland continues his journey alone. Thus begins the tale of Pigling Bland. Poor Pigling, who has lost his way, and in his confusion wanders into the home of Mrs. Peter Thomas Piperson, maker of hams, bacon, and sausages. Mr. Piperson feeds Pigling and feels his ribs while pondering what to do. However, when Pigling is left alone by the fire, he decides that he must run away, for there is an ominous atmosphere about Mr. Piperson's cottage. Suddenly, a noise. It is a beautiful black Berkshire pigwig. Indeed, she is the loveliest lady pig he has ever seen, and he convinces her that they must leave this dangerous place. Well, this is easier said than done, for Pigwig desires nothing more than to eat and sing and dance. But at daybreak, the two take off just minutes before Mr. Piperson awakes. But once on their way, they are stopped by a suspicious grocer who demands to see their papers. While he decides to check further, Pigling Bland and Black Berkshire run swiftly, hand in hand, across the hills and turf to make their way to freedom before the grocer returns. And so there are guest appearances in this wonderful story. And once again we hear from Mrs. Tittlemouse, Johnny Townmouse, Mrs. Twiggy Winkle, and Peter Rabbit himself. Listening to the visual sounds of Mike Worf. Today's presentation, The Stories and the Story of Beatrix Potter. Please press fast forward, let side one expire, turn tape or cassette over for part two of our presentation on the life and times, as well as excerpts of her works, of Beatrix Potter.
Thank you.
During this prolific creative period, Beatrix Potter developed a warm friendship with Norman Warren, junior member of the Warren Publishing Company. He was of great help to her in her new occupation and gave more than business support. A dollhouse that he had built for one of his nieces so delighted Miss Potter that it became the inspiration for The Tale of Two Bad Mice, published in 1904. In The Tale of Two Bad Mice, Hunca Munca and Tom Thumb are preparing for adventure when a real cat appears to threaten their fun. The two mice are frightened but defensive. When the cat has gone away, they creep toward a dollhouse where they plan to explore the premises, like all good inquisitive mice are wont to do. They scurry inside and finally a beautifully laid table in the dining room. But upon discovering that all the food is made of plaster, Hunca Munca and Tom Thumb become belligerent, and in the mischievous free-for-all, food, cups, saucers, and chairs are smashed to ruin. The two scamps then steal upstairs to try their luck, and on the way, drawers are emptied, clothes are spilled out, and in the bedroom, the feather bed is pummeled and picked of all its goose down. Finally, the two bad mice run down the stairs and out of the dollhouse, dragging along a soft pillow as part of the stolen booty. And so the story of Two Bad Mice. In 1905, Norman proposed and Beatrix consented to marry him, but her parents refused to acknowledge the engagement, and she was forbidden to mention it. Beatrix was resolute, but shortly after the betrothal, Norman died, a few days before Christmas in the year of 1906. In her distress, Beatrix Potter found solace in her work. Over the 8 years following, she wrote, and the Warrens published 12 more tales. She also became more engrossed in purchasing farm property in the Lake District, an enterprise she had begun in 1906 with the purchase of Hilltop Farm at Sowrey. With a steady income and profits derived from the sale of her books, she was at least financially independent and was able to invest in the land that had given her such wonderful, wonderful pleasure. In the year of 1913, at the age of 50, Beatrix Potter married William Helis, the Lakeland solicitor who managed her real estate. She moved with him to the Lake District and became totally absorbed in her new life as Mrs. Helis. Half a dozen books were published after her marriage, but these books were for the most part patched together from sketches and notes which had lain for years in her portfolios. Her creative period as Beatrix Potter ended, as she steadily developed as a hard-working and shrewd farmer dedicated to the breeding of Herdwick sheep and to all the economic problems of a farmer's life. She coped with the added difficulties of farming throughout the two world wars, and when at last she died in December of 1943 at the age of 70, she was mourned by her neighbors as Mrs. Helis of Sawry rather than Beatrix Potter of Children's Tales. Many tales written by Beatrix Potter during her prolific creative period, which was in all actuality from 1900 to 1913. English motion picture producer Richard Goodwin selected five main episodes, each taken from one of the books. And so to the screen came all the marvelous characters as the framework for a dance fantasy, Peter Rabbit and the Tales of Beatrix Potter. Peter, the most celebrated character of Miss Potter's tales and others of the well-known folk, were glimpsed throughout the 90 minutes of pure enchantment. And as the children gazed and watched, imaginations whirling in their minds and wonderment in their eyes, no dialogue was spoken, and the lilting music and the wonderful characters, together with all the imaginative choreography, came to the screen and preserved the essence of Beatrix Potter's totally magical universe. It is difficult on a program such as this to capture the flavor and the vitality and the humanity and the personality of a personage. But yet something remains. Something remains of Beatrix Potter, of the universally appealing tales that successive generations of children remember her. Her tiny volumes, 169,000 of which have been sold in the United States alone since the Second World War, have forever immortalized the Lake District as the home of Peter Rabbit, Squirrel Nutkin, Pigling Bland, Jemima Puddle Duck, Mrs. Tiggywinkle, Hunka Munka, Tom Thumb, and all the other endearing field and farmyard creatures of Beatrix Potter's magical world.